seconds, you're up.
Okay. Today we are going to deal with light, specifically light in Kabbalah and Zohar. Light is the most common imagery for mystical experience. Partly, it's the most common metaphor, but at the same time now, there's a whole new field of neurotheology that actually explains why, in terms of biology, that mystics will always see light. And we're going to start by reading several texts on light in the Zohar, and then we're going to talk about light in general. Okay, we're on Adani Mat, page 51. Can I get someone to read 51? Okay. The hidden light.
The hidden light. God said, "Let there be light," and there is light. This is the light that the Blessed Holy One created at first. It is the light of the eye. It is the light that the Blessed Holy One showed the first Adam. With it he saw from one end of the world to the other. It is the light that the Blessed Holy One showed David. He sang its praise. How great is your good that you have concealed for those who fear you. It is the light that the Blessed Holy One showed Moses. With it he saw from Gilead to Dan. But when the Blessed Holy One saw that three wicked generations would arise, the generation of Enosh, the generation of the flood, and the generation of the Tower of Babel, he hid the light away so they would not make use of it. The Blessed Holy One gave it to Moses, and he used it for the three unused months of his gestation. As it is said, she concealed him for 3 months. When 3 months had passed, he was brought before Pharaoh, and the Blessed Holy One took it away from him, until he stood on Mount Sinai to receive the Torah. Then he gave him back that light. He wielded it his whole life long, and the children of Israel could not come near him, until he put a veil over his face. As it is said, they were afraid to come near him. He wrapped himself in it as in a tallit, as it is written, he wrapped himself in light as in a garment.
Keep going.
Let there be light, and there was light. Every subject of the phrase, and there was, exists in this world and in the world that is coming.
One more.
Rabbi Isaac said, the light created by the Blessed Holy One in the act of creation flared from one end of the world to the other and was hidden away. Why was it hidden away? So the wicked of the world would not enjoy it, and the world would not enjoy it because of them. It is stored away for the righteous one. As it is written, light is sown for the righteous one, joy for the upright in heart. Then the world will be fragrant, and all will be one. But until the day when the world that is coming arrives, it is stored and hidden away.
Okay, now the third voice, Rabbi Judah.
Rabbi Judah said, if it were completely hidden, the world would not exist for even a moment. Rather, it is hidden and sown like a seed that gives birth to seeds and fruits. Thereby, the world is sustained. Every single day, a ray of that light shines into the world and keeps everything alive. For with that ray, the Blessed Holy One feeds the world. And everywhere that Torah is studied at night, one thread-thin ray appears from that hidden light and flows down upon those absorbed in her. As it is written, by day, Yidke Vavke will enjoin his love. In the night, his song is with me, as we have already established. Since the first day, it has never been fully revealed, but it plays a vital role in the world, renewing every day the act of creation.
Okay, let's go through this. The first part, on page 51, this is the light that was created. It was shown to Adam, it was shown to David, it was shown to Moses. And then it lets you see from one end of the world to the other in all the generations. Okay, even though we're reading Zohar, this is almost a direct paraphrase of Bereishis Rabba Gimel. So you're already going to see that the first half of this entire Zohar's passage is a reworked version of Bereishis Rabba. Okay, not something new. This is writing in a Midrashic style, and it's only the second half that it's going to become technically Kabbalah. Now, if you look even what's here, the Midrashic sense that there is a light that will give you knowledge of the past and future and let you see all over the world. That's part of that's a from the apocryphal works from Bayachene. You find it in rabbinic literature. I mean, many of you know that we taught the Rashi in second grade, that originally Adam got a tour of all the lights of heaven, and he saw the light of David flickering, and so he gave him some of his light. All those stories do go back to Bayachene. They find their way in Midrash, and now they get reiterated once again by Rashi and then by Zohar. The fact that they're hidden away for the evil ones is also directly out of Midrash Rabbah. Okay? The fact that great figures are endowed with light shining around them or have special abilities is also Midrashic. We tend not to play that up anymore. I mean, certainly in the more modern world, the idea that all biblical figures are really great tzaddikim whom light shines around, those midrashim I rarely hear from the pulpit. And then finally, Moshe is the one who saw the light, who was enclosed in the light. And that's the end of Bereishit Rabbah itself. We then have that little sentence there before Rav Yitzchak in which we now have the start of the Kabbalah theme. And that's the fact that everything in this world has a parallel in the world that is coming. The sense of parallelism, the kagavna, between this world and the other world is where it now becomes Zohar. Midrash doesn't have that parallelism. Zohar does. And that the world that is coming here, we know enough from reading the Sefer, becomes now the spherotic world. There's a parallel between our world and the spherotic world. You know, when thinking back to second grade, when you were told that Adam got to see the souls and saw the light of David, you generally didn't ask, so where did he go? How did he get there? Where is it kept? Zohar's answer, I mean, there are other actual real answers out there on the Midrashic level, but for the Zohar's level answer, is that it's in the spherotic realm. Rav Isaac is now coming to introduce the second protagonist of the Zohar passage, is that this light was hidden away for the tzaddikim, because the Rishayim shouldn't enjoy it. That is straight Rashi and the Bei Rashi, that there's an Or HaGanuz, that the light of the first day is hidden away. You didn't need the Zohar to teach you that. Where it becomes Kabbalah is those last three lines, then the worlds will be fragrant and all will be one. But until that day when the world that is coming arrives, it is stored and hidden away. Rashi doesn't talk about smelling of the light. It becomes Zohar when it becomes olfactory and synesthesia and the mixing of one sense of another one, that the light is now going to have a smell to it. And yes, we do know from the Bei Rashi already that the story that Yaakov, that Yitzchak smelled Gan Eden by Yaakov at the time of the blessing. But the olfactory is now played up and a continuous movement between the senses. But not that it's limited. No one's done a great study of all the prior literature on that topic. Finally, the third protagonist, Rabbi Judah said, if it were completely hidden, the world would not exist. Now we become the mystic. It's not really hidden, meaning those true mystics can always get access to the light. When you talk about the Rashi, it's La'atid Lavo. La'atid Lavo, you don't really ask, okay, so how do I get it now? Zohar, no, it's really around if you're worthy, if you can have that connection. The Zohar becomes that open, pregnant point for that mystical experience. And continues, it is hidden and sown like a seed that gives birth to seeds and fruit. Thereby the world is sustained. It's contained in the center of the world. And so it's the spiritual stuff that makes the world. And if you would only see beyond the corporeality of the world, you would see its true nature. That's the piece we did in the very first class. Beyond the garment is the body, beyond the body is the soul. If you could see to the soul of all things, you would see that mystery, you would see the mysterious element to all things in the world. And every day it shines in the world. And wherever Torah study at night, it flows down. Now what does that mean? That itself gets played out depending on what community. If for a Misnagid community, Torah study at night, for example, the Nefesh HaChaim and Yeshiva Lash and Yeshiva, meant even if you're learning Nashim Nezikin, the light shines down. If you are a Svardi Mekubal, it means studying Kabbalah at night. It means having specifically the study of Kabbalah, the study of mysticism, will connect you. If you're doing Chassidus, then it all doesn't mean Kabbalah. There it tends to mean various acts of piety and tefillah and devotion in the evening. Okay, and finally we have by day Yudkei Vavkei will enjoy his mercy. This is one of those points where you see the Danny Matt looseness of the translation, because the original version there was Chesed, that this Chesed at night from God, which he translates as love, that he is a little bit too universal in the classics of Western spirituality translation. But if you know the originals, you know to translate it back, even though this is incredibly poetic. In the new Pritzker edition, he does not do this anymore. He says perfectly, he knows he went a bit too far in this translation, and he's more exacting in that one than he is in this one. Okay? The next text I want to do is turn back to page 49. Okay, can I get someone to read 49? Go.
In the beginning, when the king conceived ordaining, he engraved engravings in the luster on high. A blinding spark flashed within the concealed of the concealed from the mystery of the infinite. A cluster of vapor and formlessness set in a ring, not white, not black, not red, not green, no color at all. When a band spanned, it yielded radiant colors. Deep within a spark gushed a flow, imbuing colors below, concealed within the concealed of the mystery of the infinite. The flow broke through and did not break through its aura. It was not known at all until under the impact of breaking through, one high and hidden point shown. Beyond that point, nothing is known. So it is called beginning, the first command of all. The enlightened will shine like the Zohar of the sky, and those who make the masses righteous will shine like the stars forever and ever. Zohar, concealed with the concealed, struck its aura. The aura touched and did not touch this point.
Then this beginning emanated and made itself a palace for its glory and its praise. There it sowed the seed of holiness to give birth for the benefit of the universe. The secret is, her stock is a holy seed. Zohar, sowing a seed for its glory like the seed of fine purple silk. The silkworm wraps itself within and makes itself a palace. This palace is its praise and the benefit to all. With a beginning, the concealed one, who is not known, created the palace. This palace is called Elohim. The secret is, with beginning, created Elohim.
Okay. So let's go through. This is the Zohar, the very beginning of Parshat Bereshit, after the Hakdamah, on 15 Aleph of the Zohar. This is now creation, this light creation. And this is this passage is, for many are absolutely taken with this passage. Gershon Shalom describes how this passage completely overtook him, and even now the recent book Malila Handler, she mentions how this passage absolutely struck them, because it's a vision of creation, not as some distance, but now an actual process in which you can actually almost see creation coming to be. It's a theosophic vision, and that's why we use the word theosophic. It's a real knowledge of the divine. It's really offering you that image. So let's go through this line by line. When the king conceived, the Aramaic original here is a technical Rosh Hermeneuta de Malkata, the beginning of the kingship, of the engraving of the kingship. And this goes back to some of those Idrot traditions that are independent. Here we only have like two lines of it because we're going to then go into Gufa Zohar language. This passage will have an absolute different variant in Tikkuni Zohar. The Idrot are based on this. This, the king is conceiving. The Ari will play this up as an important point. And then within this, we now have engraved engravings up above. There is this process in which something starts happening. Now, how you explain engraved engravings in ranges from Kabbalists that follow the Vilna Gaon will start giving you mathematical equations for it, as did some of the 15th century North African Kabbalists, the commentary of David Halevi on Sefer HaMalchut that influenced the Arei. On the absolute opposite end of the spectrum, you have Naftali Bacharach in 17th century Italy saying that God started to laugh and this is the movement of his belly. And we now have the concealed. We did this when we did the passage on Nochi in the first class. We're now unpacking it. The concealed of the concealed became a vapor in a ring, a band, it spanned, a spark gushed forth. Once again, we have the point becoming a line, becoming a circle, becoming space, the 1, 2, 3, 4 dimensionality. Branching out. We have the colors introduced here. White, black, red, and green. It's not any of it. It's above color. Above any sort. It's no color at all. Later on, these colors will also be identified with the four humors, the four biles in humans. And that's what, but it's not, it's above all of them. It gushed forward And this is seen as Keter creating Chachma, creating Bina, as we said the first point. And that's why this is called beginning, Reshit. So Keter created, there's no Ein Sof in Zohar, Keter created Chachma through these coming out of dimensionality and lights and colors. We then have the enlightened will shine like the Zohar of the sky, and those who make the masses righteous will shine like the stars forever and ever. This is the source of the title of the book, the Zohar, from the Pasuk in Daniel, the enlightened will shine like the Zohar of the sky. Okay? Shalom did not play up the light mysticism of the Zohar. It's still an important topic that still needs to be done. But this is where it's from. Less Sfirot, more light mysticism. We continue. The aura touched and did not touch the point. The Aramaic there is mate velo mate. It touched but didn't touch. It's a galoy v'nistar. It's a little bit but not. There was some little bit of touch that occurred. And through this process that Keter touched Chachma, Chachma started going forth. Meaning in its fountain fullness of blessing, it started in its fecundity creating Bina. And Bina now, from the seed of Chachma, it goes out. And that's why we say the holy seed of Chachma is in everything. The next paragraph is we become true Zohar. And like we compare God's emanation to a silkworm. Chachma is in some way the silkworm in the center of the cosmos, spinning the cocoon of silk all around it, which is the Sfirot and then the world. And I'm going to come back to what do the Sfirot look like in a second. And then finally, Bereshit Bara Elohim for Kabbalah means Bereshit with the Sfira of Chachma. Reshit is Chachma. Bara Elohim. Elohim is Bina. Elohim was created. So Bereshit Bara Elohim Es HaShemayim V'Es HaAretz is Chachma created Bina, and that in turn created Shemayim V'Aretz, which is Tiferes and Malchus. But the striking part here is the silkworm. And that's what I must go back and take a moment before I get to the light imagery here. Is how do you draw a chart of the Sfirot? Most of us, myself included, the first class, give you that nice chart of all the Sfirot. That's the image on the Latin translation of Shari Ora, and it's taken on in the academic world, the chart. Kabbalah 101, you draw that chart. But that's not what they're describing. The actual things, okay, look at the blackboard, is the actual charts, or most of them in this early Kabbalah in the 13th century, are circles. So if you deal with the one that we've just done here, the one that we've just done here is Chachma is the center of many concentric circles. Keter and Chachma are in the center, and like a cocoon, the Sfirot radiate outward with Malchut on the outside. For some reason, we tend not to draw that anymore, but that's the accurate description of what's going on here. The concentric circles, the true essence in the middle, and the world spun out like silk around the world. And the true mystic understands how we're all part of the spinning out of the silk. The other model you're going to find much more often in Kabbalah is the exact opposite of this, also concentric circles, but Malchut at the center and Keter at the outside. That's Cordovero's Pardes Rimonim. And that at least they put on the on some Kabbalah books on the cover that chart in which this one makes Malchut the center of our universe, and Keter now becomes that infinite space all above us at the end of a sequel of many, many, many circles. It's a cosmology, but we are closest to Malchut in the middle, and Keter is on the outside. So this one would just explain that, like the silkworm, is that we're spinning around. Doesn't work as well, though. Okay? But don't think these are the only models. The third model among Kabbalists is the Aleph model, in which the upper right-hand part of the Aleph, I can't do Sophras, so you have to apologize for my Aleph, the upper part of the hand of the Yud on the right-hand side is Keter, Chachma, Bina, is seen as the divine mind, those top three. The second leg on the bottom of the on the other side is Malchut, and the middle part is Tferet with the five other Sfirot, meaning for a six. This one becomes the top part of the Yud leading upward is Keter Chachma Bina 3. The central point of the letter is Tferet, Chesed Gvura Tferet Netzach Hod, Yisod. And the next leg is Malchut. Okay? That it's a 3, 6, and 1, and they need to be joined. They are three separate parts, and we're going to find many things in the Zohar corpus, especially things dealing with, say, with the Shabbat table that we're going to do later in the course, in which it's about joining 3, 6, and 1, rather than the parts of that chart. There are many other charts. Cordovera and Pardes Rimonim in Mahot Bahanhaga has a whole chapter of different charts of the Sfirot. The one that I opened with, I open with it only out of convention, but these are the real charts that actually explain texts. There are some others there for texts that I'm not doing in this course. So when you're reading them, think of those texts. Let us now talk about light in general. As I mentioned before, light is ubiquitous within mysticism, and both for biological and cultural reasons. But within Judaism itself, light is already in Tanakh. We already talk about Torah or the metaphor is right there. Chazal use light all the time as a metaphor for God. Bereshit Rabba is filled with light, and Tanchuma is almost a light mysticism. The idea that there's a hidden light was further developed by Rashi and the Bei Rashi. Ashkenaz is a visual tradition talking about seeing lights, as was the Kabbalist of Gerona. But they tended both to speak more about kavod or oneness, but it's visual. But Ibn Gabiro and Kuzari both have light mysticism, direct seeing the lights. To experience meditation or to experience the divine in Zohar, it's light. And at this point, I'm very dependent on the brand new book. Even though I've known this for years and in my own versions, I've somewhat rechanged the order to match Malila Handler's new book on Hanahar Yatzah Me'eden, on the religious experience of the Zohar, because she centers on the light, the water metaphors. I mean, all the way that I've always structured my course, but now there's a book out there that does it. And she, for example, speaks that the Zohar has three major lights: a weak light, a strong light, and a white light. A weak light, which is also called the dark light, is associated with Malchut, and it's a lower level of religious experience. Can I see some of the light? There's then the strong light of Tferet, which is seen as a bright light, a colored light. It's going to either be broken down into red, green, white, or it's going to be broken down into Chesed, Gevurah, Tferet. It's going to have all sorts of theme and variations of different passages about that stronger light. And then finally, the white light of Keter that's ever receding. Part of what she shows is that parallels Talmud Torah also, and within the Zohar, that we're going to see later on when we do passages about the maiden in the tower. The maiden seeing the Shekhinah is going to be one level of Talmud Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu, who had access to Kadosh Baruch Hu, is the higher level. And then there's always that hidden beyond, ever unknown, of Keter that's inaccessible. This is going to be played out with light as the model. The light mysticism in the Zohar has specific antecedents in ordinary Midrashic texts, and in places antecedents from the Ibn Ezra. There are quotes from the Ibn Ezra and from Yehuda Halevi in the Zohar. A separate body of traditions is the idea that we have a body of light, that we should be bound up in the Sroach Chaim, and we should be bound up after we die into a body of light. We'll see that in Jekatila. He's going to be aspiring to a body of light. The Ramban talks about it. Gerona talks about the body of light. And as much as we don't think in those terms, late rabbinic Judaism, like a lot of the iconography around it, saw saints as surrounded by lights. We didn't draw pictures of it, but we thought in those terms that saints had lights around them. In the Hebrew writings of Moshe de Leon, we have discussions, L'taken et nafsho bi'ora chayim. There's a light that you need to fix your soul. And we have imagery as man as a wick that should be seen as shining when it's tapped into the higher realm. Light in the Zohar itself will be all forms of experiential reading and Torah study. Will not just be love, but will be a light shining around you. Remind me when we do Torah and mitzvot later on, you'll have to point out the light imagery when we get there. Sexual purity of Yosef will be seen as light, that one could be able to see it on the person for the Zohar. Other cases is, or more importantly, the Zohar is going to take two separate, a brand new point. The Zohar is going to take two Gemara themes about light, both of them having histories and development, and combine them into a single theme. In Gemara Brachot, we talk about a chut shel chesed, being for someone who learns at night. And in Chagiga Yud Bet, we talk about access to the Or HaGanuz. In the passage we did a few minutes ago, the first passage, we see that the Chagiga and Brachot Gemarot were combined into one. So it's not that it's new, but when you now combine a hidden light and the fact that you can get a light at night, it now makes it, it now basically says the hidden light is available at night. The product, the sum is greater than the parts in the Zohar. And that's really what makes the Zohar. You know, if you're very skilled, you can go through every line, and if you really want it to be, for whatever reason, because you're obsessive or you want to be really firm and show every line has a line in Chazal, yes, you can, but now the sum becomes greater than the parts because there's a clear message indicated when you now think about these things. When you come across the light in Masechet Brachot, okay, that's very nice, but let's get back to Zman, and let's get back to the halakhic concerns, is that the overall product becomes greater when these past passages are now taken and recombined. Now, with this light, the mystic of the Zohar can see things that others can't see. And that will be a quality that Sapphic Kabbalah will talk a lot about having special visions, special types of sights, special ways of reading things on people. The Idrot of the Zohar, unlike the Gufa Zohar, which we've been just doing, the Idrot, one becomes absorbed into the white light itself. It goes for complete absorption, doesn't hold back on anything. And as a final point on that light before we go on and do another passage, this light imagery is the title of the book Bahir, which means shine. It is the book Zohar. Abulafia has light imagery. If we're using a light imagery, then there's a lot more they have in common. And that's another new book that just came out that's already about 2-3 years ago. And that's Chaviva Fataya's book, Hamara Vahadibur, the vision and the voice. And she divides things up in terms of visionary and auditory experiences and showing you how all these texts are much more similar than the historicist who breaks them up. That they actually, if you're looking for the experiences, they go very nicely together. It's an expensive, unlike Malila's, that's a paperback for, if I remember, like under $10. Chaviva's book is an expensive one, so I have it out from the library so that no one recall it. It's like a $60 book, and, you know, so be it. Okay. Let us continue. The discussion about lights. Where medieval Kabbalists talk about lights, Italian Kabbalists from the 17th century on and then into Mitnagdut tend to speak more about letters. They are less comfortable with giving you charts of lights to look at. So where from the medievals up to Cordovero will talk about seeing lights, seeing colors, and they're comfortable with it. We are going to watch a shift to letters. Even in their kavanot, you'll see shifts from kavanot on colors. Another one of these Kabbalah charts that occasionally you'll see, which is an Ilan of Sfirot from the 15th century. And you're going to see all sorts of colors being written in the margins. If you ever read the cover, I forgot what it's on the cover of. Colors written in the margins. But from Luria on, people use more and more the divine names within meditations. Okay? And so with that, let's now do another passage. Okay? Do you want to break on? Okay, any questions before I go on?
Yes. When we talk about that, there are three categories of light: the light that's ineffable, the light that's almost like a paradigm, and then there's a light actually that we can perceive. So is that an inheritance from Ashkenaz, which is an upper, a lower upper top to the lower ray, which is ineffable? Because they're also very much concerned with visualization.
Okay, so the answer is yes. That threefold structure is the kavod structure of Ashkenaz. There's no question of it. Elliot Wolfson has really shown that very clearly, that that's the structure that's there. But at the same time, it now becomes plugged into... You're now invited to see the lights and to engage in this journey. Ashkenaz, it's more about the kavod and things being moved within the kavod. Yes, you're getting a vision of the kavod, but not of the inner kavod. And it's much more the movements within it. Here it now becomes, as we saw, the idea of the cocooning. That silkworm metaphor is not Ashkenaz. And that's really the difference between Zohar and Ashkenaz, is that silkworm, the almost from itself, what Shalom is calling the autogenesis, rather than just the structural levels.
And also, you touched on, you said that there was some kind of, there was a change from a Tashma to a Tachazik.
Right.
And so here, obviously, it's a visualization and it's light as opposed to a human metaphor. But is this really a nuance for them? It seems that light is important for everybody, whether it's a pasuk in Tehillim or the Ra, the deification of Ra in Egypt, or it seems everybody's interested
okay.
in it.
So there's a essay by Eliada in the book, the one, which in English is called the one, came out as The One and the Many. It's got a different title in Europe. But in there, the opening essay, which takes up almost the first third of the book, is on the light mysticism within all cultures, that is a basic point, because we're hardwired for that light vision. I mean, now we'll explain it in terms of our own neuroscience, but we are hardwired for that light. You don't have to assume any cultural parallels or borrowings for the light mysticism. But he's still a great essay because it's a theme and variations on how it then becomes culturally presented, the universal mystical experience of light. In terms of the newness or not newness and the switch from Tachazeh to Tashma to Tachazeh, clearly Kabbalah is Tachazeh, it's visionary in all its forms, and the Gemara is auditory. There is an interesting book, if you're interested in those questions, by Rav Kook's student, the Nazir, Kol HaNevuah, because now that we've published the notebooks of Rav Kook in the Shemona Kvatzim, which have just come out, that have the letters between Rav Kook and the Nazir and Rav Charlap, we see that Rav Kook and Rav Charlap both had light mysticism, and the Nazir didn't. He had only auditory mysticism, so he wrote letters explaining why he's in the Tashma mode, and showing you that you don't, to be a Kabbalist, you don't have to switch over to the Tachazeh, that you can remain in the auditory mode, and that the tension between the two throughout all cultures. I don't know if that answers the question, but it's a great read. Okay. The next text I want is from Danny Matt once again, page 107 to 109, Colors and the Enlightenment.
Colors and Enlightenment. One day Rabbi Shimon was sitting, Rabbi Elazar, his son, and Rabbi Abba were with him. Rabbi Elazar said, "The verse written here, I have appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob. Why appeared? The word should be spoken." He answered, "Elazar, my son, it is a high mystery. Come and see. Certain colors can be seen, certain colors cannot. These and those are the high mystery of faith. But human beings do not know, they do not reflect. The colors that can be seen, no one was pure enough to see them, until the patriarchs came and mastered them. Therefore the word appeared, for they saw the colors which are revealed." Which are revealed? colors of El Shaddai, colors in a cosmic prism. These can be seen. But the colors above, hidden and invisible, no human has mastered them except for Moses. Therefore the verse concludes, but by my name Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, I was not known to them. I was not revealed to them in high colors. Do you think that the patriarchs were not aware of those colors at all? They were aware through those that are revealed.
Okay, this is now not based on Midrash. It's coming straight with Zohar in its own conclusion. This is from already Shmos in the Zohar. Rav Shimon is sitting with Rav Elazar and Rav Abba. And the question is, why does it say in the Pasuk, I appeared to Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, when it should say, I spoke to them? We usually read the verse that God spoke to the patriarchs. Why did it say God appeared? And the answer is, this is a high mystery. This is the mystery of faith. To understand things are not on the surface level in which God speaks to people, but to really understand the process of prophecy and prayer and divine human contact is through the process of vision. And the answer is, okay, he prefaces that certain colors can be seen, certain colors cannot. Human beings out there, they don't know, they don't reflect. They don't really think about really what's at stake in all this. The colors that can be seen, no one was pure until the patriarchs saw them, and therefore they saw Kael Shaddai. They saw the cosmic prism. They saw the divine as light, radiating through a prism. The higher lights, only Moses saw. He saw the lights of Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei. Are you telling me the patriarchs didn't see the higher lights? No, but they only saw them Basbaklari Yesheinu Me'ira. They saw them through a glass darkly, through the speculum or prism that reflected the higher lights, that the divine and the divine revelation is seen as light. Moses saw the light directly. Everybody else saw it through a glass darkly, Basbaklaria She'enu Me'ira, but it's still a question of a vision. Continue.
It is written, the enlightened will shine like the Zohar of the sky, and those who make the masses righteous will shine like the stars forever and ever.
Okay, once again, the pasuk from Daniel, this is a light mysticism. Continue.
The enlightened will shine. Who is enlightened? The wise one who contemplates by himself, from himself, words that human beings cannot mouth.
Okay, stop. Who is enlightened? Who is the maskil? The wise one who contemplates by himself, from himself. Meaning it's basically the one who can look inward and see these lights. It's the mystic. This is a statement, meaning that someone who contemplates by himself, from himself, is usually quoted in Western culture, is God is as near as your own heart, or God is as near, it's to the one who can truly look inside one. There are versions of this in Augustine and in the Sufis and hits in the Zohar too. It's a very common mystical statement. The one who can really look inside and see these lights, they're not going to be seen out on the street, they're going to be seen inside. Words that human beings cannot mouth. Okay, once again, not auditory, not speech, but color. Go on.
Will shine like the Zohar of the sky. Which sky? The sky of Moses, which stands in the center. This Zohar of his is concealed and not revealed. It stands above the sky that does not shine, in which colors can be seen. There, those colors can be seen, but they do not glow with the brilliance of the hidden colors. Come and see. There are four lights. Three are concealed and one is revealed. A shining light, the glowing light. It shines like the clear brilliance of heaven. A purple light that absorbs all lights. A light that does not shine, but gazes toward the others and draws them in. Those lights are seen in her as in a crystal facing the sun. The first three are concealed, overseeing this one which is revealed.
Okay. So they will shine like the Zohar HaRakia. Which Rakia? The Rakia of Moshe. Because Moshe had direct access to Yudkei Vavkei. He saw the true lights. He saw the concealed lights not revealed. So those people down below who can see the refracted light through the prism are really seeing a same version of what Moshe saw, even if it's refracted through a prism. You're seeing the colors that can't be seen through the light that can be seen. Okay? Did you do the fork light, the next, come and see it already? Yeah. There are four lights. So once again, there are four levels. Just like that first text we did, there are four levels. The garment, the body, the soul, and the soul of souls. There are four lights. So as much as we've had three levels, and the Zohar incorporates triad traditions, the Zohar also incorporates all quad traditions. And here we have a quad tradition of the highest light being the shining light above everything, the below that being the glowing light, the color of heaven, meaning blue, below that a purple light, or a reddish purple light of some form, and below that a light that doesn't shine, but it's like a crystal facing the sun. The first three are concealed, the bottom one is revealed. For those who need to be technical, it would then be Keter, Tferet, Yesod, and Malchut. But it's once again the fourness of it, and it corresponds the same way Yesod was seen as the body of Mitzvot. It's the same here. Possibly it could be Keter, Bina, Tferet, Malchut in some reads of it. But the important thing is that the divine is a light. And through the crystal, if we see the crystal, we see the divine. Continue.
The secret is the eye. Come and see. Three colors appear in the eye, but none of them glow, for they are overshadowed by a light that does not shine. These are images of the colors that are hidden, which oversee them. These were shown to the patriarchs, so they would know those hidden ones that glow, through these that do not glow. The ones that glow and the ones that are hidden were revealed to Moses in that sky of his. These oversee those colors that are seen in the eye. The secret is, close your eye and roll your eyeball. Those colors that shine and glow will be revealed. Permission to see is granted only with eyes concealed, for they are high and concealed. Overseeing those colors that can be seen but do not glow.
Okay, I'm going to deal with the last paragraph first. You want to know what we're talking about? Close your eye and roll your eyeball. Or today, for most of us, putting your fingers on your tear ducts. Take a moment, you do that, and you'll see lights flashing. Or you close your eyes really tight, there are lights flashing. Why do we normally not see the lights flashing if we know that it's there? Is because we're too busy seeing the light all around us. Permission to see these lights shining our eyes is only granted, the inner lights, when we stop looking at the outer lights. So now let's unpack this. The secret is the eye. And this could work for various optic systems. Three colors appear in the eye, but none of them glow. Instead, we have one single light. So whether you explain this as we have three different colored rods in the eyes, but we only see one single color of light, or there are three elements of light hitting the eye, or three elements of the eye, whichever version you have, the point is they don't all become separate lights. All we do see is the general light around us. If you say that there are three colors in the eye, it doesn't mean like pixels in a TV. It doesn't mean we see those as three separate colors. The overall effect is one single color. So too here, even though there are those higher divine colors, God does not appear like a crayon box. God will still appear as one single light coming down, because the lights playing off of each other create one single color. So this single color was shown to the patriarchs. They saw the light. Moses saw the actual sources of the lights. I don't know how literal they want to make the metaphor. But then we come to that paragraph we just did. Close and roll your eyeball. You have those hidden lights in the eye that are there. We know your optic nerve. We know your eye is responsible for light and can see even if your eyes are closed or even in the dark. You can see lights flashing, but they're overpowered by the lights that here, that are around us. So too in the mystical experience, it works the same way. It's about learning to see the inner lights, to work with these inner lights, and to see that rather than seeing with eyes of flesh the world around us, is to now learn to see with an eye of spirit that there's this higher vision of seeing the divine colors. Continue.
And so we read, Moses obtained the mirror that shines, which oversees the one that does not shine. The rest of humanity, that mirror that does not shine. The patriarchs saw, through these colors that are revealed, those hidden ones, which oversee the ones that do not shine. Therefore it is written, I appeared to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob through El Shaddai, through the colors that can be seen. But by my name, Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei, I was not known to them. These are high colors, hidden and glowing. Moses was so pure that he gazed into them. The secret is, the eye, closed and open. Closed, it sees the mirror that shines. Opened, it sees the mirror that does not shine. So, I appeared in the mirror that does not shine, which is open and revealed. This is described as seeing. But the mirror that shines, which is concealed, this is described as knowing. As it is written, I was not known. Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Abba came and kissed his hands. Rabbi Abba cried and said, woe when you disappear from the world.
Okay. I'm going to stop here. Let me just explain it. Moses had a direct vision. That is not accessible to everyone else. Most people don't see any light. The patriarchs saw the reflected light. He saw Yud-Kei-Vav-Kei directly. The patriarchs saw Kael Shaddai. So too in our mystical experiences for the Zohar, we only reach Malchut, not Tiferet. And this is the explaining the mechanism. And then once again, the lovely Zohar version, Rav Elazar and Abba kissed his hands and said, woe when you leave the world, because you revealed this great secret to us about the world. Now, one final point, since we're finishing up on light, I'm not going to go into the text that Tishbe brings. Tishbe, in the pages that I assigned to you, gives all the text about the flame of the coals, in which the Shalhevet, all the parts of the flame is attached to the one Gachelet, to the one coal, and there we have the metaphor. I mean, you think of, you have the deep blue in the center, you have that dark, really the darkness by the wick, the blue, the orange, and the yellow, that same fourfold light structure, or possibly the wick that doesn't glow, and then the blue, the orange, and the yellow, that same fourfold light structure of a wick of a candle, or of certain types of coals will produce it, and the fact that all of it remains a unity. That's the important part that Tishbe will give you in those texts, is that for as much as these are three levels, and this is where I'm going to conclude and repeat it several different ways, as much as there are four lights, all of it is really one. It's really the light lighting into the world, even if it's breaking up. So too, back to your question about Ashkenaz. Is it influenced by Ashkenaz? Yes. But for where Ashkenaz, they remain separate hypostatic divisions. There is not the Elah to Elot elotting into the world, so to speak. What's the verb? Elotting into the world, coming into the world in which it's then going to create, you know, one kavod followed by another kavod, and they're not going to say all is one. Here we do have that sense, all is one. We have the silkworm imagery, that solid, unified imagery, and that Tishri will be very good for giving you the flame, the candle, the coal metaphors, how all is ultimately one. I wanted to bring out the role of light and not the role of unity, because he did such a very nice job on the unified aspects with that. Okay, and this will conclude. Don't forget to read Tishri.